everyone. Welcome to the Brighter Horizons podcast brought to you by Farm Grad Wishlist. If you're new here, you should know that we believe we can end health disparities. It starts with discussion, leading to actionable change, and emphasized by amplification. My name is Catherine Ungai, and I'm your new host of the podcast. I'm here today with a good friend of mine, and we're going to be talking about a really timely topic, the pharmacy residency match process. And so many people, thousands of people go through the process every single year. There's a lot of stress, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of disappointment, but I felt like knowing someone who, as strong in character and as strong as spirit as Chidinma, I thought she'd be a great person for you all to hear her story, but then also just hear about tips and tricks about going through the process. So I'd love to have my friend introduce herself first before we dive right in. Chidinma?
Thank you for the introduction, Kathy. I really appreciate it. My name is Chidinma Ahara. I am a current PGY2 oncology pharmacy resident at UCSF, the University of California, San Francisco. And I came to California by way of Texas. I was born and raised in the Austin area, went to pharmacy school at Texas A&M. And then I, like most people, applied for residency, did not match on my first try. I went into the phase two, did not match again in phase two, applied for a job, got a job, and worked for a year after pharmacy school, and then reapplied for residency a year out. And I've matched at UCSF, and I've been here ever since. Outside of pharmacy, my clinical interests are, of course, oncology, malignant hematology, as well as like critical care and academia. And outside of pharmacy, I really enjoy baking, long walks around the park, and listening to true crime podcasts. So that's a little bit about me in a nutshell.
I love that. I love that last bit, the true crime podcast. And more than anything, I love your story, Chidinma, because it's really an example of delay does not equal denial, right? So my first question for you is just, what motivated you to pursue pharmacy residency to begin with?
Thanks. I think for most people, including myself, when we think about pharmacy practice, we really think about it in like two or three buckets. We either think pharmacy as in like industry and that realm, we think community, or we think hospital. And I know for my school and for my peers, a lot of us were told, if you want to work in a hospital, you have to do a residency. Like, they will not look at you if you don't have a residency. And I knew at the time as a student, my interests were very wide. So I was interested in pediatrics. I was interested in critical care. I was interested in oncology. And I knew that I wanted to practice at a high level. I wanted to practice at an academic medical center. And so I told myself that if I was going to practice in these areas, that I had to do a residency. And I saw it really as a means to an end to further my career. And so once I became a P4 and I was on my appies, I was very open about telling my preceptors that residency was my career goal, that after PGY1, I wanted to do a PGY2 in a specialty, wanted to work at a big hospital. And that was, you know, the path that I saw for myself. Very straight shot, very much 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4, and we keep going. And I never anticipated or even planned for not matching like right out of school. And so it was very interesting to my path and my journey to residency.
Thank you for that. So speaking of residency, if we have listeners, you know, who are P1s or even, you know, pharmacy student hopefuls, or who just haven't really considered the residency match process yet, would you mind just giving kind of a brief overview of what the different phases are of the match process?
Sure. So for matching, if you're going through an ASHP accredited program, there is the initial match process where everyone is applying at the same time, interviewing at the same time. And there's, you go through forecasts, you apply, and you submit your applications. And then after the portal closes, you will get an email from like programs directly, either telling you, thank you for your time, we will not be interviewing you, or congratulations, we would like to interview you for our program. And after you interview, you submit a rank list, and the programs will also submit their own rank list. You pray to the gods if you believe in them, and, you know, submit. And then the first phase of phase one is complete. And on match day, you find out if you matched or if you did not match. And after phase one is complete, you go directly into phase two. So all of the candidates who did not match in phase one and all the programs who did not match in phase one are basically redoing the application cycle. So you, again, send your applications to these programs. They will review them. If they want to interview you, you will interview with them. You submit your rank list. They submit their rank list. And then you have a second match day, per se, and you find out if you matched or not. And then finally, there's the scramble, which I personally don't have experience with because I decided not to scramble when I did not match after phase two. But is what I have heard is it's basically a free-for-all. So these are programs that have gone through two rounds of interviews. They still haven't found a candidate that they matched with. These are candidates who, again, have either gone through phase one and phase two, haven't matched, and it's you're reaching out to the program, they are reaching out to you, and it's very much, very quickly happening, and you will more likely than not get on-the-spot offers for these positions in the scramble.
Thanks for breaking that down for our listeners into something a little bit more understandable and less overwhelming, right? When you're on the National Matching Services website, it can be very overwhelming looking at that timeline. So thank you for that. You'd also mentioned in your intro just about some of the challenges and going through phase two. Could you walk our listeners through some of those challenges that you encountered when you were, when you found out that you didn't match and then you realized that you'd have to attempt or make the decision whether or not you wanted to go through phase two? What was that like for you?
I think for me, the biggest hurdle was more of an emotional one of I had tied a lot of my identity and who I was into my ability to match and the fact that I considered myself a strong applicant. So taking a step back, we are told as we go through pharmacy school, like there are certain criteria that programs look for good candidates. And so if I were to show you my CV and my applications, you would see things like vice president of organizations. I was in ROCHI, I was in PLS, I was in SSHP, I did community service, I was working on projects and had research. I had great letters of recommendations. I thought I had a strong letter of intent. I had a good CV. So in my mind, all of these things that I have done was my value as a person. And I thought that I have done enough things to be a good, strong candidate, and I should get a residency. And so when I didn't match in phase one, I almost felt like everything I had done in the last 4 years was almost for nothing. And it was very demoralizing. And I felt a lot of shame because we don't talk about not succeeding on our first try. And I think pharmacy as a career, we are all very type A, very outcomes driven, perfectionists, and we have to for patient safety. And that's very important. And so having my identity, having my self-worth tied to a position and a title that doesn't necessarily mean anything was very hard for me. And so when I didn't achieve that and when I didn't match the first time, I was distraught and it was very hard. And so I took some time away. I talked to some of my preceptors, some of my mentors, and I just told them, like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why I didn't match. And they were also, surprised. They were like, Chinima, you were a strong student. You were a strong applicant. Sometimes that's just, the year. Maybe it's the programs you applied to. Maybe it was the candidates that you also were competing against. And so I think the first hurdle that we have to overcome is this idea and this concept that you becoming a resident, you matching, you having this position will give you value. When in reality, you as an individual have inherent value, inherent worth, and all the things that you have done in pharmacy school to prepare you to become a resident or to prepare you to apply, that is all part of your journey. And that is all makes up who you are. And it won't diminish or increase because you match or not, but rather it gives you a lens and an opportunity to serve your community and to be the best version of yourself. So I think that was the big thing, was really like the mental and emotional toil of not preparing to receive the muse of not matching and overcoming that. I think the second hardest part is just the accelerated timeline. Phase two goes by very quickly. In phase one, you have weeks to submit your CV and your application. You have a long time between when applications are submitted and when interviews happen, and then a couple of weeks between when interviews happen and when match day is. But in phase two, all of that timeline is very condensed. And so not only do you have to sort through your emotions and really pivot, but you also have to look at the programs that are available for phase two, see if they match your career goals, see if it's something you see yourself being successful in, and then very quickly rewrite your letters of intent, get the feedback that you receive from not matching in phase one and apply it to your current application and make all of these changes. And so the accelerated timeline is really a challenge as well.
I really understood, or really, I think that just resonated with me, your first point about your first challenge, the mental aspect. I think a lot of us who went through the residency match process, we dealt with a lot of imposter syndrome. And when you don't match, you even have to fight that. You have to fight that voice in your head even harder. So I'm really happy that you did and that you decided to keep pursuing it. So thank you. My next question for you is somewhat of a two-part question. So seeing that Farm Grad Wishlist, you know, was created to help amplify voices of minoritized groups who are pharmacy students and eventual pharmacists, I would love to know, how did your identity as a minority student pharmacist and your support system both play a role in your path during this application process? And how important were those two things to for you? So your identity as a minority student, and then that support system that you had.
Yeah, thank you. I think for me, my minority status is something that is very central to how I practice pharmacy, how I navigate through the world, and also how I hope to impact the world in the future. As a woman of color, I became a pharmacist because not only have I experienced health inequity as a patient, but I know loved ones who have been harmed by the healthcare system. And so I really try to focus that and highlight my passion for diversity, equity, and inclusion, for culturally competent care in my application, and looking at programs that also valued and invested in diversity and invested in their patients and their learners, and training them in ways that will lead towards growth and protection of our patients who have been disenfranchised by the system. And how that has translated into my approach to residency and how that has helped me succeed is, like, my best and most fiercest advocates have all been other people who share a minority identity. During my time in SNAFA, I made so many great friends and so many great connections. And when I didn't match, everyone who, like, was in that room was there for me to push me to succeed. And they were cheering for me. And they were reviewing my letters of intent, reviewing my CVs. They were giving me their time and their connections. And that is something intangible that, as a minority woman, you don't realize how much these connections help you and how much there is power in the relationships that you have. And so that allowed me to have more faith in myself, and allowed me, especially when I applied the next year, a year out from school, just to apply to, like, my dream programs. I don't think I had initially the confidence to, you know, leave my home state and apply to a program, one that's as prestigious as the one I'm in now, and that's so far away. But because I had such a group of cheerleaders and people who believed in me and told me, like, you have the ability to do this and we believe and we trust in you, it really expanded my vision and increased my reach. And so that was very important and meaningful to me.
Support systems are so important. And I definitely can speak to the SNAFA part of your answer, because that's how I met you. And that's how I met so many great people, and really just that support system about them encouraging you and making you believe in yourself. A support system can make you feel like you can do anything. So speaking of, you know, that confidence and that belief in yourself, what advice would you have for those who, you know, go through the match process and don't match in the first phase? What advice would you have about motivating themselves and having that confidence moving forward in the match process, or even the following year's match process?
Yeah, I think my number one advice that I give people is being a resident is not the best thing to happen to you. The best thing to happen to you is the fact that you are here and that you have a story to tell and that you are able to contribute to the world. And you are not defined by a position or by a title or by your job. All of those things can change. Some of the best pharmacists I know and worked with have never completed a residency in their life. And there are others who have. And there are really great pharmacists who have completed a residency, and maybe not so great pharmacists who have completed a residency. So this title does not give you worth. And so I think going into the match, whether it's phase one, phase two, the scramble, a year out, 5 years out, 10 years out, with a sense of self, and with an identity and knowing that all of these programs need something from their residents. They need our voices. They need our experiences. They need our perspectives, because we are the future of pharmacy. We are going to push the needle forward. And while we are grateful for the learning opportunities and for the knowledge that our preceptors will give us, and while I have learned so much from, you know, my residency years about myself, about healthcare, about my specialty, I still have something to offer that is intrinsic to who I am. And I still have an ability to connect with my patients at a very unique way because of the experiences that I've had as a person of color, as a woman here. And so my number one advice and my number one tip for students or for applicants is to just know who you are and know what you bring to the table and highlight that. There, no one has lived your life. No one has the experiences that you have had. And don't be afraid to share that in your interviews, in your letter of intent, and talk about the things that make you passionate, because that is what makes you different and that is what makes you important. Whenever we are looking at our resident applications, you start to see a trend of, you know, very high achievers. Everyone cannot be the president of every organization. Everyone cannot have published 7,000 articles, but only one person can live your life. And so when you tell us about that, and when you tie in pharmacy, and when you tie in, you know, how this program specifically can help you accomplish those goals, that's what's going to make you stand out. And that's going to be your driving factor for when you do match and the days are hard and it's long and you're thinking, what am I doing this for? It's going to be for the reasons that you stated. And then my second tip for people who are going through phase two or reapplying is, again, to like focus on your motivations and have people who are willing to be your advocate. And so really reach into your preceptors, your professors, your school systems, and milk the resources that they have for you. Everyone's preceptors is happy to be there, not only for your wins, but also for your losses. And I think sometimes we feel a lot of shame and we feel like we need to isolate and do things by ourselves. And that is not the case. Whenever you are down, that is the time to reach out and to connect and to be uplifted by others.
You know, I think communicating in general can sometimes be hard for a lot of us, and just being vulnerable in the workplace. I think it's a really beautiful thing. That in itself is a podcast episode all by itself, talking about showing up as yourself or partially yourself in the workplace, but especially just communicating that vulnerability. And I think residency especially is the best time for you to do that, right? There's more space for you to do that. There's more there's more space for you to do it. But on top of that, it kind of sets the foundation for what you do moving forward in your career. If you need a space to be vulnerable, if you don't do it early, it might be a little bit harder to do it later. So I completely agree with that. Chidima, now that you've shared so much great advice and shared your story, I'd love to know, you know, is there anything that you wish you knew if you could like go back in time, everything you know now, mm-hmm. what's something that you wish you knew before you had started the process?
I wish I knew how, I don't know the best way to say this, but how hand wavy it all is.
do explain that.
I think being as pharmacists, I feel like we are very much like, oh, we have to follow a formula, like things make sense. Right. We're very much like, again, very strict perfectionist. And so we would also think when it comes to like picking applicants for residency, that there is like a universal rubric. And like, if you just play by the rules and if you check all the boxes in the rubric, then you will get XYZ results. Yeah. And really, it's not. Every single program has their own rubric and they are not all the same. And even then, you might have a great overall composite score or whatever for one program, and you are like in the bottom 10% at another program. And even if you like get an interview and you're being discussed by, you know, the people who will rank you, a lot of it is very arbitrary. After, there are some things like number of clinical rotations. Did you have a job? Did you do publications? Like those things are very set in stone. Some programs may put more emphasis on that than others. But at the end of the day, like the ranking list is very, very arbitrary. So you really can't take the fact that you matched or you didn't match too hard, too much, because at the end of the day, like everyone's credentials are pretty similar. And it can just be like one person had a louder advocate for them in a room, in that specific room, than another person. And also tying back to diversity, equity, inclusion, it could just be the people who are making decisions in that room are not very diverse. And you could be a rock star and be perfect, but that community, that area is just not ready to receive you and will not be a good location for you to be nourished and to be strengthened and embraced. And so I think taking a step back and looking at the fact that imperfect people are making imperfect measurements to work in an imperfect system, and that we are all flawed, and that none of this is really, there's no standardization. There's no one size fits all. Every program is different. The people within the programs are different. And so understanding that, understanding the culture of different programs is, and how varied that is, really helped me not take things too seriously, especially even when I applied, you know, the second time, I didn't get interviews to every program that I applied to. And I was able to take a step back and just accept that maybe that was just not for me. And that's okay.
You have so many good catchphrases from this episode. As you were talking, I'm literally thinking, I'm like, I don't know which one I'm going to choose when I write up this description. Chidinma, you really are a wealth of knowledge for our listeners. And you kind of tapped into my next question, or like my next thought regarding like DEI and just, you know, some people in the room not necessarily being ready to accept or even having the frame of reference to realize that spaces that they're in don't represent the rest of America or the rest of the community that they're serving. Mm-hmm. So personally, just, you know, now that you're about to be done with your second year of postgraduate training, in the future, do you have any plans to kind of, wherever you end up, right? Do you have any plans to be a part of residency leadership, to be that voice that could have been there for you or could be there for the next you? Do you plan to just be involved in those types of efforts, DEI efforts?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I remember I was doing a residency panel for a recruiting panel at UCSF. And one of the candidates was telling me like, oh, this is the first time I've seen like a Black resident. And
wow.
I also think to myself, I was in pharmacy school before I had a woman of color teach me STEM, and that's too long. And of course, you know, by the time they get to like residency training, like I would have hoped they would have had exposure to different people in different walks of life. But I am the person that I am partially because of the preceptors that I've had. And I can only hope that as I practice and develop myself, that I can pour into my students that way, and that my influence on them and that my ability to help them become more culturally aware, to deliver culturally competent care, to seek not only for areas of injustice, but areas of improvement, and to be a tool for change. I think that's one of the best things we can do for our healthcare and for our patients, is to just give them more access to better providers. And we can do that by teaching, by dismantling, you know, institutions and structures that purposely leave people out. And so as someone who has aspirations for leadership in various like pharmacy organizations and in pharmacy school, I can only hope that my future will help me to teach learners, and that when they experience and go through my rotations, or I go through my lectures, or however way I interact with students, that they leave with clear eyes and opener arms.
Wow. You know, I wish you could just see my face when you said that that one student said that they've never seen a Black resident. That's just like eye-opening. That's shocking for a multitude of reasons, but I'm just happy that they met you, right? And they're able to talk to you. And I can also agree with, or I have a similar story of not having a Black professor until college. I was an undergrad. And it wasn't a STEM professor, but it was a music professor. I think it was my freshman or sophomore year in college. And you're right, that is way too long.
Yeah.
Way too long. So to take us home, and you've shared a lot of advice, but I have one more question of advice. If you met a student or recent grad who had, you know, nearly not the same, but a pretty close story to yours, what would you tell them? What's like, you know, just a short and sweet piece of advice? It doesn't have to be short and sweet, but what would you have wanted to hear, I would say?
I would tell them to think about why they want to do residency, especially if you are like me, where I had gotten a job in a hospital. I was working mostly operations, but a lot of clinical things as well, lots of per pharmacy protocol. And I was making pharmacist money. And so the thought of getting a pay cut and moving and all these other things, why was that enticing to me? And it was so that I could serve my patients. And I knew that I wanted to do residency so that I could have access to the highest level of learning, so I could practice at the top of my license, and that I could help my disenfranchised patients in the best way and be a leader in pharmacy practice as well. And that those were my motivations. And so I would tell whoever was in a similar position to assess their motivations and to think about, do you really need a residency to get to where you want to be? Is this really something that you see for yourself? And is this a stepping stone to where you want to be in the future? It's 1 to 2 years of your life. And if it's something that you think will get you to where you need to go and that will help you and be advantageous for you, then do it. This is the perfect time, especially if you don't have a lot of commitments, you don't have to move, or you have the ability to move and to try new experiences. But really making sure that like you're doing it for the right reasons and not just because, oh, I was told that I have to do a residency to get to where I need to be. Explore. Pharmacy is very diverse. There's lots of things you can do. And so ask other people, ask your friends, your preceptors, tap into your network and see, you know, how did they get there? How are they doing? And what are my options?
Fabulous. Thank you so much for your time, Chidinma. And I, like I said, I really think this topic is very timely, and I'm really hoping that it resonates with our listeners and anyone who has a similar story to yours or who are considering residency. I think residency is a very beneficial thing, but being very introspective and asking yourself, you know, do I really want this, or am I just listening to what everyone tells me, is also a super important question throughout this whole process. You've been great. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. So thank you all for listening again to the Brighter Horizons podcast, and we will chat with you soon.